Welcome to the Tapped In Podcast, a production of the Bellingham Tap Trail. Tapped In covers the people, news, and events in and around Bellingham's craft beer scene. My name's Aaron, and I'm your host for today's episode. Now, I know we cover Bellingham craft beer, but this is a special episode. I got to attend the Great American Beer Festival 2017 in Denver, Colorado, so I'll be featuring a few interviews in this episode for my trip. Before we start, gotta say big congratulations to Bellingham Brewery Chuckanut for taking home two gold medals for their Kolsch and Dunkel Lager at the Great American Beer Festival. Also, a huge shout out to Wander Brewing as well, who also took home a gold medal from the awards. If you want to read more about it, check out the article that Scott Pelton wrote on our website at taptrail.com. All right, before we get started with today's episode, I just want to thank our sponsor, Hoppus Real Estate, for making this possible. Specializing in Whatcom's core neighborhoods, understanding wants and fulfilling needs with community, craft, and comfort in mind. Located at 1012 DuPont Street across from the Lettered Streets Coffee House on Facebook and on Instagram. Thanks, Hoppus Real Estate. So the Great American Beer Festival 2017. This was my first time attending the festival, and I was not prepared for the sheer size of the festival. I mean, I saw the numbers beforehand, but until you actually get into the conference room and actually try and walk around everywhere, it is massive. There was over 800 breweries pouring beers at the festival, and there was over 3,800 beers to try. So, no easy task. But aside from the beer festival itself, there is also a lot of events going on outside and around the festival. One of them being the Sam Adams Brunch. I was fortunate enough to be invited to that, where there was a panel discussion on what it means to be an independent craft brewer and the challenges facing the craft beer industry in the coming years. Afterwards, I got to sit down with the Brewers Association's chief economist.
My name is Bart Watson. I'm chief economist at the Brewers Association.
How long have you been with the BA?
Over 4 years. It's my fifth GABF.
All right.
Flown by.
Right. So, the beer industry, we had a pretty good year, didn't we?
You know, it depends on what part of the beer industry you're looking at. Overall, the beer industry was, as Jim taught me, I shouldn't say flat, it was stable. Dollar sales were up a little bit since we are seeing that premiumization going on. And the craft brewing community is having a little bit better year, 6% growth last year and 5% growth at mid-year 2017.
And overall, what is the economic impact last year?
So in 2016, the economic impact was $68 billion, billion with a B, pretty tremendous, and a jobs impact of more than 456,000 full-time equivalent jobs.
And where in the country are we seeing the most growth in terms of like openings?
Well, we're seeing growth everywhere. You know, that's the simple answer. You know, as you get into it, one of the interesting things is that we haven't really seen the catch-up that everyone keeps expecting, that a lot of the openings are still happening in the states where there are a lot of breweries. So there's still a lot of openings in places like Washington or California. We maybe have seen a little bit of a slowdown in some of the really leading edge states, you know, Colorado, Oregon, where those per capita numbers are super high, but we're still seeing a lot of very small breweries opening in even, you know, very mature markets.
Do you have like a percentage of breweries that have actually closed in the last year?
It's been running very low. So we've typically been running, you know, 70, 80 closings a year. I think that's going to rise a little bit this year. But, you know, out of the 6,000 brewing companies, I mean, we're still talking about a remarkably low percentage of the breweries closing.
So what's your speculation that would drive that increase of shutdown?
Well, some of it is just a large numbers. You know, we have 6,000 breweries. So even if you're still at the same percentage, you know, 3%, you know, I mean, you're going to get 180 that close. And so that number is going to rise just as we have more businesses. And, you know, businesses fail for a whole variety of reasons, many of which have nothing to do with the market and have everything to do with the difficulty of running a small business. But we're also in a more competitive place. And so some of the closures are going to come in markets like Denver or Portland or Seattle, where it's crowded out there.
Right. 10 years ago, we see these breweries that are well established now. They have a huge market reach in terms of their distribution. But the breweries that I've been speaking with and been seeing opening really seem to be like around the 7-barrel range. Are we going to see more of a trend of the super hyper local brewery?
I think we are. And that is still the vast majority of breweries in the country. I mean, 75% of the breweries in the country make less than 1,000 barrels, which is pretty tremendous. I mean, 75% of the breweries in the country making less than 1% of the beer. And, you know, the market's crowded out there. It's hard to get it, you know, on the shelves at a supermarket. It's hard to get a new tap handle. And so, you know, a 7-barrel, a 10-barrel, you know, that allows you to be local, nimble. You know, many of them are focusing on selling a high percentage of their beer directly at their tasting room or in, you know, very limited local distribution. And, you know, that might be the right size for a lot of new breweries to see where the market is for their beers. And you can always scale up. It's much harder to scale down.
Yeah. So we're at the Sam Adams Brunch. You were just on the panel. One thing that came up in the panel was how malt is going to be the new hops. So is the BA doing anything to help and support those industries? And where is that kind of focusing in the country?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I think one of the things that's under noticed in a BA program that I love and is really important is we're doing a lot more to fund, you know, basic raw materials research. So we're giving out about $500,000 in research grants a year. And a lot of those are going on the raw material side, particularly into malting barley, thinking about malting barley in new ways. You know, most of the malting barley in this country was developed with the large brewers in mind. And if you're making an all malt beer, you may be looking for slightly different characteristics, you know, different levels of protein. So we're certainly trying to invest there. I think a lot of the innovation too is going to come on the malting side and the micro maltster side. You know, that's, you know, we're certainly working with them, you know, trying to help them understand the market and what brewers want.
Yeah, like an example in the Pacific Northwest for me, Skagit Valley Malting. I'm not sure if you're aware of them, but
they're probably the best known up there.
Yeah.
Doing a great job.
Yeah.
Wayne Carpenter.
So are we going to see like more of those guys, do you think?
I think we'll see more though. You know, it's a tough market and I think there's a great space out there for specialty malts. I mean, they're also doing some interesting stuff with, you know, ancient grains. I mean, they have their purple Egyptian variety that they're using. But, you know, to make the economics work, they're also going to have to find brewers who are interested in base malts. And the cost there is a challenge. I mean, there's scale in malting as well. So we'll see how many can survive. I think there is going to be a place, you know, as we move to this local taproom model, brewers who are making a little bit more margin can look for things that differentiate themselves on the raw material side. So that all local beer is something that drives people to their brand, to their taproom. So I think that space will grow, though. How big it can get, I think that's an open question.
So how big of an impact does the Pacific Northwest have on the industry as a whole?
Well, I think you're going to see it's more in the Pacific Northwest than in other places because so many of the raw materials are grown there.
We're lucky.
Yeah, depending on how far you extend the Pacific Northwest. I mean, Idaho is the leading barley growing state in the country now. You know, and Washington also grows a lot of barley. And obviously the hops are heavily concentrated in primarily Washington, but then secondarily Oregon and Idaho. And so that economic impact goes more there because you're getting that supply chain. And, you know, the hops industry in the U.S. is now growers are, you know, I think it was a $500 million crop last year, which is the most all time. And, you know, a lot of that money is getting reinvested in new trellis and new hop fields.
Do you homebrew at all?
Occasionally. Not as much as I'd like being on the road so much, but you know, we get to homebrew with work, which is one of the many perks of this job. And I'm trying to think what the most recent thing we made was, but we make a lot of fun stuff. We're always pushing the envelope. We did a golden kind of scotch, you know, ale recently that was a lot of fun. And it's always fun to play around with the system.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
That was Bart Watson, chief economist from the Brewers Association. One of the breweries on the panel was Fremont Brewing out of Seattle. I got to sit down with their owner after the panel.
My name is Sarah Nelson. I work at Fremont Brewing.
And you were on the Sam Adams panel this morning at the brunch. How exciting was that to be asked to be a part of the panel?
I was thrilled to be asked. It's a huge honor to represent craft brewing to so many people in the local and national media.
Yeah, because it was really focused on the independents and the independent brewers. Yeah, I think you guys did an excellent job of just because it was various breweries from around the country. And you touched on something that I think is really big in the Pacific Northwest. And that is the drive towards the independent malting. How big of a factor is that for you guys? And do you see that growing in our region at all in the next few years?
Yes. So we are big supporters of the Cascadia Grains Conference, which brings together brewers, distillers, bakers, anybody that uses grains. We're trying to ultimately grow the grains economy west of the Cascades because before Prohibition, it was that was a major crop. And then Prohibition happened and Kent turned into warehouses and then tulips and whatever else in there. So there are reasons why we want to revitalize it. Number one, it's an economic generator. It gives farmers one more crop. It fixes the soil. It's good for many reasons on an ecological basis. It's also another way that we can innovate. Like I said, malt is the new hop. You know, when we consider that the percentage of hops in a beer glass is much less than the malts, we need to really explore more flavor profiles of malts. It's more subtle, but it's very important. And so that means supporting local maltsters. There's Skagit Valley Malting that we work with that does a great job for us. And we're seeing that model pop up across the country. And also, finally, there is a sustainability angle because it means that we're not bringing our heavy malts from long distances. It's just right up the road.
So the ultimate goal for you is you'd want to be like the 100-mile brewery, right? Where all your ingredients is sourced within 100 miles?
How far is Yakima from us?
I think just borderline.
The more local, the better.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that there is a local flavor. And it's people want to know where their food comes from. And they will care more about and pay more for ingredients or products made with ingredients that are close by. And it supports smaller farmers instead of the big agribusiness. So that's important.
And I hate stereotyping, but I think it does play a role. Like us in the Pacific Northwest, there is a culture of we really want to know where our food comes from. And how are we not damaging our environment because we live in a very precious environment. Do you see that trend kind of like going across the country as well with some other breweries?
I think that it all depends on the climate and where these crops can be grown. But yes, I do think that, well, you just see the organic growth across the country. So I do think that there is a desire for more sustainable agricultural practices. And in some communities, that's going to take hold faster and stronger than in other communities. It really depends on educating the consumer. And we, Fremont Brewing, we are not doing a very good job of educating our consumer about why we are using Skagit grain, why that pint might be a dollar more. It's just like there's so many things to do in a brewery. Sometimes the marketing and explaining, you know, takes a back seat.
And I think once the consumer does learn the fact of like this came from Skagit Valley, which is just basically on your doorstep in comparison to where most of the other grain comes from, I think they would be willing to pay that extra dollar knowing that it is going back to their local business, right?
So. Right. And one of our beers, our Cowichan Canyon Fresh Hop Ale,
that was a delicious beer.
It's certified Salmon Safe, the first Salmon Safe beer in Washington. And we would get it organic certified except for a glitch at the hops plant. But the point is that those things matter to consumers as well. But, you know, there is no decal for what I'm talking about with the Skagit grain. So it just depends on, you know, taking the time and putting the resources into teaching folks what we're doing.
And I have to say, excellent run on all the fresh hops this year.
Oh, thanks.
They were beautiful this year. So how long have you been coming to the Great American Beer Festival?
Gosh, so Matt, my husband, has been going ever since probably 2010, maybe 2009. I came 2 years ago, and we tend to switch off CBC and GABF unless we can get grandma to stay with our two kids for several days. So this year, it was my year to come here.
How important is this festival and event with everything surrounding it for you as a brewery owner?
You know, that's an interesting question because people come from all over the country and we're not distributed in a lot of places. So tasting our beer might be a thrill, but it, you know, they might not be able to get it into their hometown. So in terms of growing our market, I don't know if this is the best venue, but it's great for my brewers and my other staff to just meet other people in the industry. I think it's great for our cohesiveness. They learn things, and it's the informal relationships that happen at this event that are the highest value.
Have you had any collaborations come out of it?
You know, they're probably talking about it at our booth that I don't know about. We always do the meet the producer booth. So we always want to talk to our folks, which is requires a lot of staffing because you have to be there the whole time. So it's expensive and it's labor intensive, but that's what we want to do. We don't want somebody else to pour our beer. We want to pour it ourselves and interact. We've won awards. I don't know if we'll win an award this time. I think that, you know, maybe one of our fresh hops has a good chance, but we'll see.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for asking.
Huge thank you to Sarah from Fremont. Now, the Great American Beer Festival itself, it's over 3 days. There's four sessions and the awards are on Saturday morning. And it is a massive, massive event. If you haven't been, I highly recommend you attend because it is very unique in that all the breweries from across the country bring their best stuff and you get to try everything. Unlimited 1 ounce pours of whatever you want. And everything's divided into regions as well. On my first day, I really wanted to seek out beers that I just can't get in the Pacific Northwest. So I visited Tennessee, Texas, Florida, New England, just to see the kind of beers that they have. If you're only going to attend one session, I'd say definitely one of the Saturday sessions, because it's after the awards, and the winners put little stickers next to the beers that they're serving that won. so you can run around and try the gold medal, silver, and bronze winning beers from around the country. But you got to be quick because supplies are limited and they run out fast. And I got to talk to one of the big winners on the day from our friends to the south in Bend, Oregon.
Your name, sir?
Kyle Spoon.
And who are you representing?
Sun River Brewing Company.
And where are you guys located?
Just south of Bend, Oregon, Central Oregon.
So you had a big day today.
Yes, we hauled in 2 gold medals and a small brewery of the year. So,
right. And what did you win the medals for?
We won for Fuzztail, which is our American-style wheat beer with yeast is the category. I think it was just over 50 entries. One gold medal with that one, and then we won gold with Cinder Beast Imperial Red Ale, big high hops, 10% ABV, 100 IBU, monster beer. So, and then, yeah, small brewery of the year. So,
how long you guys been open?
We're on to year 5.
And how long have you been coming to JABF?
3 years now. First year didn't win anything. Last year won a silver medal in strong pale category with Rippin, our Northwest Ale. And then this year, obviously, kind of exceeded our expectations. So.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Because, yeah, there's so many breweries participating. So well done for you guys for taking the medals out and small brewery of the year as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a huge honor, obviously. Super humbling, and we're just happy to be here around in the best industry in the world, in my opinion. So
cheers.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man.
At the Great American Beer Festival, it was just amazing to see just the camaraderie with each other. Everybody was just so supportive and so friendly with everything that everybody was doing. At one point, I was talking to a sales representative from a Florida brewery. I said, hey, what's a beer that you just can't get in Florida? And he says, a good Kolsch. And I said, well, I know where to get a Kolsch. I showed him over to the Chuckanut booth and we got the Kolsch and he was just blown away by it. The following morning was the awards. And in the awards hall, when Chuckanut won for Kolsch and the Dunkel Lager, I saw the sales rep from Florida stand up and cheer. So yeah, so that's the type of atmosphere. And it's just a great atmosphere being at the Great American Beer Festival. All right, one more interview before we leave. And I got to talk to a representative of the Brewers Association about their initiative for the independent seal that they've introduced this year and what the Brewers Association is up to in the coming year.
My name is Julia Herz, and I'm the Craft Beer Program Director for the Brewers Association.
And how long have you been with the Brewers Association?
Collectively, about 14 years.
All right. And how long in your current role?
My current role since 2007.
We're at the Great American Beer Festival. With you being at the BA, how many festivals in total, and did you come before you started working at the BA?
My first introduction to the Brewers Association was volunteering at this very event
right. In
the 90s, 1994, I think. I have only missed a few over the years, and I didn't track it. So I've been to most since 94, which is nutty.
So yes. how did beer find you?
I grew up in a household with 2 big factors. My dad's a foodie, was always pushing us to try experimental things, taste outside the box. And then my brother had a beer can collection. So before I was 10, we were going to a place called the Brick Skeller that's no longer around in DC. They had a beer list that was over 500 bottles, not even draft, of the world's, any beer you could get, the Brick Skeller tried to get it and carry it on their menu. And so my parents would take us there to support my brother's beer can collection. So before I was 10, I was thinking about different kinds of beer, different styles of beer, marketing and packaging on beer, and watching my parents be in a good mood and, you know, enjoy beverages around food. So that was a big seed that was planted.
So has your career path always been beer involved in some way?
Nope. I always did want a homebrew. And eventually in my 20s, I was broadcast journalism major in college. I had a job at Washington, D.C. Bureau, actually out of college, which my parents were jazzed. I was jazzed. And then I didn't like it very much. It wasn't what I expected.
It can be a grind.
Yeah. And I mean, it takes a certain personality type. Many good people that I worked with that are in their careers gone very far. But it wasn't for me. So I left and I took a cross-country trip just to kind of clear my head, almost a year on the road. And on that trip, we would go backcountry with the Golden Eagle Pass, National Forest, BLM land, or national parks. Then we would backcountry 3 or 4 nights, come into the towns. If we didn't know anyone in those towns, because we were on the road almost a year, we would just go to the local brew pub. And that's where we connected with the most like-minded people. And we usually were given great advice, and people, kind of the community of brew pubs, took care of us on that trip.
And the good places to eat and where to get supplies and all that stuff.
Yeah, and so it was on that trip, I'm like, I want to work. I want to be one of these people. I want to work in a brewery.
All right. So did you end up working in a brewery?
I tried. You can't see me on the radio. I'm about 100 pounds in a wet towel. And I had every right to work in a brewery. I still do. It shouldn't be based on size. There's many innovations for brewers, men and women. It's not based on a certain weight requirement for what you should and shouldn't brew. You should be a brewer because you can brew kick-ass quality beer. Mm-hmm. But when I did try, I didn't know enough in brewing. I was home brewing, but I didn't really have my game down. So when I eventually landed in Boulder, Colorado, the Brewers Association had a position, and that's what I went for.
All right. In the past year, the Independent Craft Brewers Mark has come out from the BA. What started that program, and what's been the uptake like?
So you're asking about the Independent Craft Brewer Seal. This is a new certified mark that's on, frankly, most every brewery in the hall here has signed on to download the art. We launched it on June 27th, and since then, we have 2,300 plus breweries that have accessed the art to use it in some form, representing 75% of the volume of craft beer made. So that's incredible. It's been an option for years to help small and independent craft brewers differentiate themselves. That's actually part of what my role at the Brewers Association as craft beer program is all about, is to advocate and educate that there's an important place and value for supporting brands from small and independent producers. And so we want to see that continue to happen. And in the last few years, it's gotten a little tougher out there. There's been a lot of acquisitions, and formerly independent breweries have been purchased by big beer, and you can't tell on the label that they're purchased.
A very blurred line right there.
Yeah, things are muddy.
Yeah, from the regular consumer's perspective that may not actually be that educated in their local market for breweries, right?
Right. Things are muddy. If you pick up a beer from a brewery that's been purchased, you wouldn't know who owns them, the parent company. And so since they are, Big Beer is not putting their name on the labels, we decided to create a mark that small and independent brewers can put on theirs. And there you have it. So now it's out there, and we'll give it a year. And I think you're going to start to see it everywhere.
So what's been the BA's role in trying to educate the consumer, or is it done more on the local brewers level to get the awareness done?
We're still in the adoption phase. So adopting, getting breweries to adopt is where we're focused now, and all in good time.
If anybody wanted to sign up as their own brewery, what is the process and the steps that they need to go through?
Sure. So if you're a brewery listening and you signed up, and we're calling all of you, we know your we know your name in the list because we want to win you over. Brewersassociation.org/seal is the place to download the actual art. You must have an active TTB license. You must qualify as a small and independent and traditional craft brewer, according to the Brewers Association definition. And by the way, 98% of the 5,700 breweries in the U.S. are small and independent craft brewers. And you must sign a license agreement to use the art.
So a topic that came up because we were at morning brunch event, one of the topics that was raised by Sarah from Fremont was she kind of sees this next wave of malts being the new hops in terms of the industry. Do you at the BA also see that? And what is the BA doing to support those industries outside of just beer?
Sure. I loved that she brought that up. And that was such a poetic statement because it's been said that hops are the soul of beer, and now it's on to malt. The BA has a very prolific technical team and committees. We are a membership-driven organization. We have 7 subcommittees, and one of them is focused on access to raw materials. And we have a supply chain director, Chris Swerzy, who also runs the judges for the Great American Beer Festival. And he is focused on trying to ensure that craft brewers have access to both malted barley and hops and the like. So the efforts are deep. You know, we have 6-figure grant investments for grant programs for raw materials too. And so that's a big deal.
With your role at the BA, how much of an influence has the Pacific Northwest in your eyes been on the greater industry?
Absolutely. Like for example, hops, 30% of the world's hop supply comes from the Pacific Northwest. We know that, right? And so that is a huge part of the innovations that I think has gone on in craft brewing. You know, the number one selling U.S. beer style still today, undisputed, is American lager. The second style, which is craft brewer driven, is an American IPA. And American IPA is centric because of the hops, and frankly, the hops from this country, the hops with forest flavors, the hops with fruit and tropical notes. And that is directly a result, I think, of where the Pacific Northwest has taken us. You do have a history in the U.S. where we had hops coming from all parts of the country, and that's certainly on the rise again. also super cool. And I don't know, frankly, for the barley regions in the Pacific Northwest, how prolific they are, but where the maltsters are, right? You have maltsters who are taking this barley and advancing it. And that is a key part. And you have some active maltsters in your area.
Yeah. They're doing an amazing, amazing job out there. And a lot of the local breweries there are actually converting fully over to their malts as well that I'm aware of. So do you think we'll see those specialty malt guys emulated throughout the country in the coming
years? Yeah, you have a Craft Maltsters Association now. So they're representing more than a handful. I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but, you know, 2040 Craft Maltsters, and forgive me, I don't have my latest stats, but that is a community that's growing and powwowing, doing that collective powwow with each other too. And they're working with heirloom malts. We also just published a book in the last year or two from John Mallett. John Mallett published Malt, the book Malt. And that is an incredible book that talks about a lot of heirloom malts and a lot of new ingredients to kind of chase down and have craft brewers start to brew with.
We have the Independent Seal, which is the initiative from the Brewers Association. What are the key things that you're going to focus on next year?
Oh, we're focused on everything from draft system maintenance is a huge thing. Working with retailers, beer clean glass, things on the government affairs side is huge. Very, very huge. We're working on the threats to aluminum being shipped into the country right now. We're working on licensing and getting craft brewers to be able to have access to an open database so they're within the laws and actually the music they play in their pubs and tap rooms is legal. I talked about the grant programs and the raw material work and beer lover education too. So, I mean, the list is so prolific sometimes with the National Association, it's really hard to kind of summarize it all. But I think if you look at any angle in beer in the U.S., somehow, some way, our members through the association are working on it and working to advance it.
Now, from the consumer's perspective, is there a resource on your website that they can go to get better educated?
Oh, yeah. Craftbeer.com is our main beer lover website. We get millions of visitors a year and is the number one website talking about the stories behind the small and independent craft brewers. We also have beer and food resources that is unmatched, untouchable. And that's another big piece of our work. Of 600 culinary institutions, we're not able to get one documented that has beer education on the same level as wine. So kind of crazy there. And so we have the resource that they could beef up their curriculums from it. And the public has access to that as well.
And finally, what does the Great American Beer Festival mean to you?
Oh, it's like a national holiday. You know, these guys hanging out are volunteers. There's more than 4,000 volunteers. As I said, I started as one. And this is, you know, I think the main Super Bowl of beer. We have the competition going on behind the scenes right now with 8,000 plus beers. Number one commercial competition in the U.S. is this festival, or is the Great American Beer Festival competition. Tomorrow are the awards. Most exciting part of the whole week is the awards and seeing who's deemed to make the best commercial example of certain beer styles. And I love how the hall is set out by geography. The majority of beers made in the U.S. aren't distributed out of their own state of origin. So I can walk in the hall and it's like a beer lover's dream. I can go to, you know, the Southeast and find beers that I would not normally get. And so you really have it all in one place for 3 days.
Yeah, like yesterday, I made a point of going to like the Tennessee brewers and like the Texas brewers because I just can't get that stuff in the Pacific Northwest. So it's a great time.
One ounce of time, greatness.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very busy, so I really appreciate your time to chat with me.
Yeah, thank you back.
All right, big thank you to the Brewers Association for putting on the Great American Beer Festival. And if you haven't been, once again, highly recommend you attend. If you want more coverage from the Great American Beer Festival, you can listen to my podcast, the Cascadian Beer Podcast, at cascadian.beer or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. If this is your first time, be sure to go back and check out our previous episodes. There's some great episodes that we've released in the last few weeks. If you enjoyed this episode and love Bellingham craft beer and never want to miss an episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Tapped In is a production of the Bellingham Tap Trail. And the content director is Scott Pelton. My name's Aaron, and thank you once again for listening.